Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
Have you ever received a phone call or email promising you a fantastic rate on return on a surefire investment? Well, this is your host, Jane Kawaski, experimental psychologist, Dr. J. And I will be joined by the Senior Director of Communications, Michelle Boykins, who is filling in for Jim Nico as my co-host on the Social Network Show, as we continue our National Crime Prevention Council series during the National Crime Prevention Month of October. And Michelle has invited a representative of the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, or FINRA, Investor Education Foundation, to help you get informed about investor education. Preventing fraud is a major focus at the Washington, D.C. nonprofit National Crime Prevention Council. And I'm honored to be joined by Ms. Boykins, who directs all operational aspects for the public education campaigns symbolized by McGruff, the crime dog, his nephew Scruff, and the Take a Bite Out of Crime slogan. She provides assistance to state and local enforcement agencies that want to promote the McGruff public education campaigns locally and serves as a primary spokesperson for NCPC. She has secured major news coverage for NCPC from CNN, The New York Times, The Washington Post, and has been interviewed or quoted in numerous television, radio, and print media, from MSNBC and Fox Networks to CBS Radio, Consumer Reports, Woman's Day, and Popular Mechanics. Before joining NCPC, Ms. Boykins had extensive expertise and experience in media relations at a top 10 public relations firm. She has a BA in Communication Studies from Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University. Michelle, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Dr. J.
I know you have a fantastic guest today. Would you like to introduce her for us?
Yes. Today's guest is Jerry Walsh. She's the Senior Vice President of Investor Education at the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, FINRA for short. In that capacity, she manages FINRA's investor education initiatives, including developing and implementing new programs, creating interactive tools for investors, publishing print and online educational materials, and coordinating with government and nonprofit partners. She also serves as president of the FINRA Investor Education Foundation, where she manages the foundation's grant-making and programmatic efforts to educate and protect investors. Her work focuses especially on research to advance understanding of the relationships among financial literacy, financial capability, and financial well-being. She leverages distribution channels to distribute effective, unbiased financial education resources and sustainable programs focused on traditionally underinvested groups of Americans, including young adults, women, Native Americans, and members of the U.S. military. Jerry joined FINRA in May of 2006. Welcome, Jerry. It's a pleasure to have you today.
Thanks so much. I'm delighted to be chatting with you.
Michelle, I'd like to ask Jerry some beginner questions, if it's okay to start off.
That sounds great.
And Jerry, the very first thing I want to know is, what is FINRA and the FINRA Investor Education Foundation?
FINRA is the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, and we are the nonprofit, non-government regulator of the securities industry. Now, what that means is anyone that sells a stock, bond, mutual fund to investors in the U.S. has to be licensed by us, and we enforce rules that govern their behavior to protect investors.
And the Investor Education Foundation?
The FINRA Investor Education Foundation is a nonprofit foundation that provides underserved Americans with the knowledge, skills, and tools they need for financial success throughout life. We have a number of programs, grant making in research and on-the-ground efforts, but then also some directed projects like our investor protection campaign.
Wow, that is very helpful to know. I didn't even know you existed, so I'm so glad you're on the show. What are some scams we should be on the lookout for? It sounds like you're good at spotting those.
We do our best. We have an Office of Fraud Detection that monitors what's happening across investors' worlds. And what we see is that scams pop up day to day and they change. The fraudsters that are behind them can turn on a dime when it comes to changing their pitches, timing them to the news or aligning them with current trends. But some of the recent trends that we've spotted have to do with viral diseases and particularly Ebola and the Middle East respiratory syndrome.
Oh, really? Well, what should people do when they receive an investment offer or solicitation? And could you give us some idea of how they're going about that in connection with these diseases?
Fraudsters use a variety of tactics to reach investors. They do it through internet chat rooms and you know, web pages that people go to for stock tips. They also send out unsolicited emails. Sometimes you'll receive a phone call. People have even received pitches for investment scams through their texting and through social media. So there's a variety of channels that the scammers use. The package that they come in is almost always the same, which is that there is a company that is poised to burst. It's the next big thing, and they've got the solution to whatever the current problem is, whether it's viral scam, diseases like Ebola or some other issue like clean energy.
Well, that is certainly taking advantage of the latest problem that people see and the greatest fears and anxieties. And I do want to know, though, about a specific type of scheme, and that's the pump and dump stock scheme. I heard last month the government charged people in a pump and dump stock scheme. That's a tongue twister. How can you spot that, and what is it?
Well, let me tell you what it is first, and that's when a scammer lures investors with aggressive or optimistic statements about a certain business, and that business might be purportedly related to Ebola or it might be something else. But what they do is they issue all these press releases, they might send out emails, other promotional material, and it's all aimed at creating demand for that company's stock shares. And that's what's called the pump. They're pumping up people emotionally, and they're trying to pump up the security itself. These are usually thinly traded, very, you know, small companies, low capitalization rates. But once the share price and the trading volume for that stock starts to rise, the cons that are behind the scam sell their shares. So they make a profit, but then they dump out of the offering, and they leave investors with worthless or near worthless shares of stock.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty straightforward method, but we need to be on the lookout for that. The FINRA Investor Education has been doing some interesting things with the National Crime Prevention Council. Can you tell our listeners about your partnership?
Absolutely. We've been working with NCPC for a couple of years now, and we've developed a crime prevention toolkit that's been distributed to more than 100,000 crime prevention practitioners, and we've done trainings in 13 states. We've also had national initiatives like the public service announcements featuring McGruff the Crime Dog and others that focus on the persuasion tactics that cons use, because in the pump and dump scheme, the target, the driver, the hook will change from scam to scam, but the persuasion tactics that the cons use never change.
And can you give us an example of one or two of those persuasion tactics?
Absolutely. There, what we have done over the past really 8 years is compile a body of research that helps us understand why some people are victims of financial crime and investment crime, and to understand how investment fraud works. Mm-hmm. And what we found is that these cons who engage in pump and dump schemes and other tactics to persuade people to invest in these programs use a couple of influence tactics consistently. And
well, you know what? I think let's take that up in the next segment, okay? Because I want to spend enough time on that, and I'm going to ask Michelle to lead off with more questions about that and follow up on that with Jerry Walsh from the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority Education Foundation. So we'll look forward to hearing more specifics about that in the next segment.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
Some would call 88-year-old Sally Jackson a lucky senior.
A few years ago, a family member offered to move in and care for Sally so that she wouldn't have to leave the comfort of her own home.
But soon after, one of Sally's neighbors, Carol, paid a visit, unannounced.
Something wasn't quite right.
Sally's demeanor and physical appearance had changed.
Luckily, Carol was aware of warning signs that might signal elder abuse.
Such as bruises, poor hygiene,
isolation, depression,
appearing withdrawn or unusually quiet, as if to hide something.
When victimized, elderly people often feel ashamed, confused.
But an alert neighbor helped Sally.
Not all abused seniors are as lucky as Sally Jackson.
McGruff the Crime Dog here. The National Crime Prevention Council wants to help you and your loved ones prevent elder abuse. Know what to look for. Know how to report it to local law enforcement agencies.
To learn more, go to www.ncpc.org. That's ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council and the U.S. Department of Justice.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show. This is Jane Karwoski with my co-host, Michelle Boykins of the National Crime Prevention Council, in our series with them. We're talking with Jerry Walsh of the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority and the Investor Education Advocacy, the Investor Education Foundation of FINRA. So, Michelle, if you will do the honors.
I'd love to. Jerry was talking most recently in her last response to you about working with NCPC. I'd love to pick up on that, Jerry. You've made a point to work with NCPC to educate law enforcement on investment and financial fraud. Why is it so important to engage law enforcement on these issues?
Well, it's really critical to demystify financial fraud and investment fraud in particular. A lot of people don't understand the mechanics of fraud, and there can be a blame the victim mentality that we want to try to turn around. If somebody has bruises, you believe that they're a victim of some sort of physical abuse. But when somebody is a victim of financial abuse or financial fraud, there aren't any visible signs. And so that's why we're working on these training programs across the nation to make sure that law enforcement have the tools and resources they need to identify investment fraud when they see it, and also to educate the community and their fellow crime prevention practitioners.
And you mentioned victims. Who are the typical victims of investment and financial fraud?
Well, it's not always who we assume. I think there's a stereotype of the little old lady living alone, limited means, gets a phone call, and all of a sudden her retirement savings are gone. Victims of investment fraud tend to be college-educated, financially literate males. Usually they have a partner, a spouse, or somebody that they talk to about their investments, but they've often had some sort of negative life event, maybe the loss of a job or the loss of their spouse. The key, though, is that these are people that know something about investing.
What should people do? What are the most important red flags that we should all be concerned about before investing?
Well, through the research that we've done, we've identified five persuasion tactics that con criminals use when it comes to financial fraud. And, you know, it's dangling of phantom riches, and it's the appearance of having an authority that's telling you that you should invest in this opportunity. Social consensus, the idea that everybody in a community is engaging in this investment. There are other tactics that the cons use. What's critical is that people learn to spot those persuasion tactics and become persuasion literate.
Jerry, you have a lot of good resources on your website. Can you talk a little bit about where someone can turn for help when they have been scammed?
Absolutely. Come to saveandinvest.org. Saveandinvest.org. There you'll find a host of resources that describe the persuasion tactics that con criminals use, provide links to places where you can file a complaint. It's critical, if you've been a target of investment fraud or any kind of financial fraud, that you complain to the authorities. We'll get you to the right authorities through saveandinvest.org.
That's a very valuable resource. Thanks a lot. And I assume that AND is spelled out, A-N-D, saveandinvest.org.
Yes.
Thank you, Jerry, for the valuable input you've given us today.
Thanks so much. We're happy to help McGruff take a bite out of crime.
And thank you, Michelle, for joining me in hosting the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure always.
Next week, Michelle will be back with another guest for the Crime Prevention Month of October. And in the meantime, please have fun and be safe off and online until we welcome you back to the Social Network Show.
You've been listening to the Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on the Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012. Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business-to-business, business-to-consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
You've had some great ideas in your life so far, and some of them you took from imagination to reality. Those are times of great excitement, energy, and productivity. What can you do, though, to maintain that growth or revive it once you reach that nearly inevitable plateau stage? Two things, one of which you can accomplish in the next 25 minutes. First, consult with Joy Sargent, our next guest. And second, follow her instructions found in Beyond the Launch, the practical guide to building a business that thrives. That's Joy's new book that overflows with great practical help for businesses, including, of course, strategic use of social networking. This is your host, experimental psychologist Dr. Jane Karwoski, along with Social Network Intermedia's chief instigator, Jim Nico, founder and CEO of Social Network Intermedia. Glad to have you back, Jim.
Thank you very much. And wow, what an exciting guest we have. This is going to be interesting.
And thank you, our listener, for joining us to hear from Joellen Joy Sargent of Clairaufin Consulting. Please let me tell you about her. Joy works with startups and small to mid-sized businesses to ignite growth. She advises senior executives, CEOs, and owners on topics including business strategy, revenue growth, brand positioning, strategic marketing and communications, customer experience, retention, and referral marketing programs. Joy speaks and writes regularly on strategic social networking at her sites, joysargent.com and howbizgrows.com, as well as others such as the social media or Social Media Today. Ms. Sargent is one of fewer than 40 people worldwide certified by Million Dollar Consultants, Dr. Alan Weiss, who deliver all three of his private roster mentor programs. Joy, welcome to the Social Network Show.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be with you and your audience, and I appreciate that very kind introduction. Thanks.
Well, I am delighted to have you on the show, and I've been in devouring your book, Beyond the Launch. It truly is, to me, extremely practical, and you've got very helpful tables and charts in there to help us. And also, I notice, of course, that you have a chapter on digital marketing mastery.
Absolutely.
So I'd like you to tell us a little bit about what you explain in that chapter particularly. Would you like to start with the whole idea of the website?
Oh, absolutely. And really, the website is kind of the home base, if you will, for your digital presence. And I've had several clients over the past few years who said, do I even need a website? Because they think, well, I can do Facebook and make that be my epicenter for everything I do online. But really, your own website is the property that you own. So you can do whatever you want there. You own the content. You don't have to worry about that might disappear one day if for some reason, you know, Facebook decides to make a change. You could lose your Facebook page, which is a terrible thing to happen. but really, that's kind of where everything starts. And that's where you can do all your lead generation, attract all your traffic. And from there, you can branch out and do social media and do other things in the digital world. But you can always come back to that home base.
So your website is your home base from which you
Absolutely.
Can expand and add services and so forth. You know, one thing you said earlier on in the book that I really appreciated, because we've observed this ourselves, and that is that, for instance, in the issue of search engine optimization, that when that first became a must-have for any business with a website, anyone who knew a little about the topic would hang out a shingle and call themselves an expert. And as you know, more recently, social media has become the new ground for the faux experts, as you call them. So how do we spot those? And, you know, how can we be sure that the supposed expert is, in reality, someone who's going to deliver?
Well, you really have to look at results. I mean, that's the ultimate. It could be somebody that's been doing it for just, you know, a year or so, but if they're delivering exceptional results, they could be a great partner for you. But it's so important, because so many people don't know what they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very easy when somebody comes in and they talk a good talk to wake up one morning and find out your money's gone, but you don't have the results that you wanted. So you have to be very selective about who you work with. Personalities and things like that can be important, but really drilling down to results. So talking to people who've worked with them in the past, seeing what kind of programs they've done, what kind of results they've delivered, whether that's generating new leads or increasing your following and your digital footprint, that sort of thing.
So that
and something else. Oh,
excuse me, let me just ask you this then. So, excuse me, along those lines, how do you measure results? Do you have favorite tools that you really have confidence in measuring those results?
Well, there are a lot of tools out there, and I'm not so much enamored with a specific tool as I am having a strategy from the beginning. So you need to know why you're doing social media particularly. What are you trying to accomplish? So is it a matter of you want to engage better with an existing group of customers, or are you trying to cast a wider net and attract people to you? you need to understand what those metrics are, and then there's any number of tools out there that can help you identify the data that goes to those metrics that you've decided that support your strategy.
Well, I'm not asking you, though, to endorse any specific tool, but mm-hmm. I mean, what can you name a couple that, that you have confidence in? I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, there's a lot of people out there saying that they measure. I mean, as far as I know, but anyone mm-hmm. that you like in particular?
Well, I find a lot of the data and the reporting within the social networks can be very helpful. And as well, there are resources like Hootsuite is great for putting information out and for scheduling, and you can also use that to look at things like, are you getting retweets, or are you getting engagement? So you can do that sort of thing. But I do recommend for my own clients to develop a dashboard, and they may aggregate data from a lot of different tools into that dashboard, but that's where they can track their custom metrics that tie back to their own individual strategy.
And who provides those types of dashboards?
I'm a grassroots kind of person, so I really advise putting it together yourself, and you can do it, you know, in PowerPoint or Excel or something like that.
Mm.
So make it easy. Don't spend a lot of money.
Oh, well, that's a good tip. And do you explain how to do that in any of your publications? I know you've got a lot of online white papers and so forth.
You know, I actually haven't written about dashboards. That's a great idea. I need to tackle that one.
Okay. Let us know when that
Thank you.
is out there. Another thing you pointed out was social listening, and I found that intriguing, just in terms of knowing your competition and ways that you can keep an eye on developments, new trends, or even problems or gaps in the service. So how would you go about doing that?
Really tuning in, and I'm glad you honed in on that because it's so important. So many people decide they want to send a lot of information out, and they're not thinking so much about listening to what's out there in the social aura, mm-hmm. if you will. So you can use tools like Google Alerts to set up an alert to tell you when a competitor is mentioned or a specific product or service is mentioned, so that you can start to track things like people's attitudes, whether they're positive or negative about yourself or a competitor. You can look for market trends and see if there's sudden interest or things, topics they're starting to trend on Twitter, which you could look at by assessing certain hashtags and tracking those. But really just tuning into specific issues within your industry that are going to affect your business in the future is really important for being successful, not just in social media, but in business in general.
And in Twitter, I know there's a discover mode mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. you could use to find out what would you suggest? Do you put in a hashtag that you think would be relevant and see if there's been any traffic on it?
Yeah, you can do that. You can look for trending hashtags, and there are other tools like Hashtagify is one that comes to mind, where you can put in a hashtag and it will show you related hashtags and how much interest they're getting. So you may have in your mind one word that I want to track, say it's cameras, and you may go online and find out that people are looking at something else and camera's not the word they're using, but they're using snapshots or they're using photos or something like that that's related.
And
you
that
can sort of build. Oh, go ahead.
That was called what? The hashtag?
Hashtagify, IFY.
Okay.
Wow. So that leads to related hashtags, like you, the mm-hmm. example you used with camera might lead to snapshots.
Right.
Wow.
Right, to photos or pics or something like that.
And do you put that in with a hashtag? I mean, I'm not trying to be redundant, but would you put hashtag, the actual symbol, and then hashtagify?
No, you just put the word in.
Okay.
It has a little box there, and you can just put the word in, and it'll pop up. And it's really neat because it gives you almost kind of like a mind map, a visual representation of related hashtags.
Okay,
wow.
So this is once you go to the site, hashtagify.com?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Fascinating. See, this is why we're so glad you're here, because there's these little tricks, you know, mm-hmm. that people don't know. Are there any other tricks that you'd like to share with
Well, that's one, and this is one that it sounds simplistic, but so many people who are relatively new to social media don't know about it, and that is if you do invest a nominal amount in a service like Hootsuite, you can schedule a lot of posts. So if you're struggling with time management for how do you handle all of your social media and activities, you can schedule posts at certain times of day for your basic information, and then you can go in and manually fill in the gaps to say articles that you found that you want to share or things like that. But that can be a huge time saver.
Right, and we know there is a Hootsuite university that is a very extensive training program in using Hootsuite, and that is, if people have never heard about it before, it's Hootsuite, like the C-suite or the suite of offices, and they provide a lot of information, as you say, that doesn't have to be the only tweets you send out, because you want some that are on in real time. In fact, there's this gets into more time intensive work, because if you're going to be replying in real time, but there's no reason why you can't check it out every once in a while during the day and see what's happening and send out a spur of the moment tweet with your URL attached. Mm-hmm. Well, we've got lots more to ask you about, and so we're going to take that into the next segment. Thank you so much. We've been talking with Joy Sargent, and we'll continue in our next segment.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
Some would call 88-year-old Sally Jackson a lucky senior.
A few years ago, a family member offered to move in and care for Sally so that she wouldn't have to leave the comfort of her own home.
But soon after, one of Sally's neighbors, Carol, paid a visit, unannounced.
Something wasn't quite right.
Sally's demeanor and physical appearance had changed.
Luckily, Carol was aware of warning signs that might signal elder abuse.
Such as bruises, poor hygiene,
isolation, depression,
appearing withdrawn or unusually quiet, as if to hide something.
When victimized, elderly people often feel ashamed, confused.
But an alert neighbor helped Sally.
Not all abused seniors are as lucky as Sally Jackson.
McGruff the Crime Dog here. The National Crime Prevention Council wants to help you and your loved ones prevent elder abuse. Know what to look for. Know how to report it to local law enforcement agencies.
To learn more, go to www.ncpc.org. That's ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council and the U.S. Department of Justice.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
This is Jim Nico here, back on the Social Network Show. And just a couple of quick things. One, I want to mention that the hashtag 50 shows, we are launching, we're right in the beginning of launching 50 shows to facilitate and catalyze women's empowerment worldwide. These shows are going to be started, hosted, and about women, and we're really open to trying to produce those shows for anyone, any entrepreneurs that want to get their own shows going. So you can reach us on Twitter at @socialnetshow. You can check out the 50 shows hashtag, and you can also get a hold of us through our website. That's thesocialnetworkstation.com. And various other ways. If you want to get a hold of Dr. J, it's at @socialnetshow2. And please take a check of that and join us if you can. We appreciate it. 50shows.com is the website on that if you want more information. And again, the hashtag 50shows. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim, and welcome back to the Social Network Show, where we're talking with Joellen, or Joey Sargent, and she is the principal of ClaraVaughn.com, ClaraVaughn Consulting. So, Joey, What would you recommend in terms of a business needing a blog? Does a business really need a blog on their website?
Well, a blog can be extremely helpful for both thought leadership and also for educating, your constituents. That can be your customers, your partners, your potential employees, that sort of thing. But you really have to be committed to it and ready to sustain it, because there's nothing worse than a blog that's got one post from 6 months ago and nothing else.
So is that how much does a person have to do to make it not quite the worst?
Not quite the worst. Really, you should blog at least once a week, because less than that is not enough content to, number one, to pop up in the search engines, but also to really keep your audience interested. If it's just once a month, it might be better just as a newsletter that you push out to people who are interested.
Mm-hmm. We have also heard from various people talk about, like, amount of words. I mean, in other words, we've heard people say, look, if you're going to write a blog post, you'd better write at least 250 words. And then another person said, you need to write at least 350 words. And, you know, do you have an opinion about that for SEO and all that?
Well, I do have an opinion. I think for SEO, you definitely need more than 250 words. I blog every Thursday, and typically it's anywhere from 500 to 750 or 800 words, so mine tend to be a little bit longer. But I do have a lot of colleagues who are having great success with kind of short-form blogs, so they're just doing, 250, 300 words and blogging more frequently, which can work very well if you've got an audience who just wants little snippets of information or tips and that sort of thing. But if you want to go deep, you need a little bit more longer posts.
Do you syndicate your blog anywhere?
Yes. Well, it's on Tumblr, and it gets picked up occasionally by Social Media Today. I don't post every week on social media, but if I have a good social media post, it pops up there.
Cool. Thank you very much. And you're on LinkedIn, I assume.
Absolutely.
Okay, yep. Cool. Well, what about your contact information, Jane? Will you read that? I know it's in the back of the book there. Really important. We want people to be, I know you're on Twitter, and just want people to find your book and be able to reach you. You want to read that, Jane?
Well, as I mentioned at the beginning, howbizgrows.com and joysargent.com. But I want to mention that Sargent is spelled simply S-A-R-G-E-N-T. Joey, J-O-E-Y, so joysargent.com. And
Twitter?
Your Twitter is at Joellen Sargent.
Oh, cool.
And that's Joel plus Lynn.
Wow. Very cool. Very cool. She's good. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got to check Joey out. She's got it. She's smart.
Thank you.
Wow. And the book. I love the book. The cover's cool. Read
the
title.
You know
again,
what? It is. It's a beautiful cover.
Cool.
It's a black suit, red tie, and somebody, cutting with the scissors that red ribbon.
I think that's me.
With the launch. So that's why it's beyond the launch.
Yeah, it's probably beyond me too. But I love the cover. And no one, everyone talks about the launch. No one talks about beyond the launch.
Yes. Well, that was the premise for the book, is that a lot of people get so excited about starting a business, and then they wake up the day after the ribbon cutting and go, oh my goodness, what did I do?
I know. I think this is so brilliant because, a lot of people talk about the car and starting the car, but who's talking about driving? This is good stuff. We're, cutting edge.
We were just talking about blogging, and ironically, the genesis for the book was from my blog. I realized I had a lot of blog posts that I could sort of read together and fill in the gaps and come up with a book that was very digestible, so it's really easy for people to pick it up and just look at a section and say, blogging, for example, what do I do if I want to start a blog, and how do I know if I should or shouldn't? Makes it really easy to read.
Right. And you have a blogging readiness test.
Uh-oh. I knew I was going to get in trouble here. Jane, give me a question out of that, will you?
Well, I
Please.
Will, except that I just lost it.
Oh,
now I found
it. Okay. I have it right here.
Okay,
good. All right. It's not the SAT. It's a 5-point test. So the first question is, are you genuinely interested in writing a blog?
No, I'm not. But I do it because I'm going to flunk this. I know I'm going to flunk it. But you know what? Okay, that's a good question. Okay, I kind of like that. What's the second one?
Are you committed to blogging consistently?
Oh, boy. Yes, I am. Okay, right. I got an A so far. Do you mind? I don't want to take anything else away from the book, but do you mind asking the third question?
Not at all. This is the trick question. Do you have something to say?
Oh, damn. I knew I was going to flunk out. Okay, let's move it right along.
He's got a lot to say. He's always got something to say.
Oh, and it's you. Do you have a point of view? Do you have a unique take on things? Are you regurgitating all the same old stuff?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not doing well now.
Oh, yes.
I'm sinking into the morass. Well, I've only written 60 posts on LinkedIn since they invited me. Of course I have something to say.
Yes.
That's a good start.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So we can go on. There's only 5 questions. Question 4 is, do you have the skills or resources to optimize your blog?
No, that's the problem. I don't know. I mean, I write a lot, but I don't know that I'm the most popular blogger in the world yet. Jane, am I? Or am I missing?
Well, there's nothing like aiming high, Jim.
Damn.
Okay. So on that, well, go ahead and go to number 5, and then I'd like to come back to number 4 because I'd like some answers in addition to questions. And
okay. Well, number 5 is, do you know what your audience wants to read as opposed to what you want to say?
Oh, interesting. So if you have, I'm going back to number 4, skills and resources to optimize the blog. And this, of course, goes back to SEO and keywords.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned a very helpful tool or trick of the trade in terms of looking for keywords to find out what other hashtags are related to it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you can do the Hashtagify is great. And actually, in Google AdWords, there's also a tool that you can search and see which keywords are most popular.
Okay.
And that actually ties right into question 5, because the way you think about a topic might not be how your audience thinks about it. So understanding the words they use and working those into your blog is going to attract more interest and more traffic than just speaking it from your own point of view.
I have what might be construed as a dumb question, but it's very important to me. Okay. So one point, I was invited to write for a pretty big publication, and they asked me to pick out something that was trending, et cetera, and write about that. Okay, now here's what might be the dumb question. If there's something really popular and I write about it, you say it's trending on Yahoo News or whatever, I mean, am I just going to get lost in the crowd? Or is that really the way to go? I mean, should you write about trendings if you have something really important to say, that is? I mean, that's where I'm confused.
Yeah, well, and I think it's good to use that approach. You don't necessarily need to use it all the time, but it can help you sort of get into a larger conversation. But you do have to have a unique point of view, and it needs to be a genuine connection. So it's not that you're just kind of stealing the headline from another topic to get attention for your blog. You need to have a real point of view about whatever that topic might be.
But you would jump on a trend, though. You would do that, even if a lot of people are writing about it. If you had something really important to say, you would jump on that trend, right?
Yeah, why not? I mean, your voice is just as important as everybody else's. If you've got a great point of view, you should share it.
Okay. And it's more likely to be picked up on the search engines, even in the crowd?
It can be,
okay.
Particularly if you have a unique take on it. Maybe you have a contrary point of view to what the common wisdom is. So you can be surprised sometimes.
Okay.
He's a contrarian, all right.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's good to know.
That gets a lot of attention.
Oh, that's good to know. Okay. Well, so we have a couple more minutes left. Is there anything else you want to focus on? She's interested.
Well, we talked about content marketing. You talked about it in the book a little bit and mentioned that it used to be produced by analysts, researchers, writers, journalists, and so on. How does that relate to the person on social marketing and trying to use valid content? How to not be part of the problem?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I mean, and people don't want to just hear from you. They want to know what you respect and what interests you. So sharing articles that you curate from other sources can be a great way to kind of feed your audience with some additional points of view.
Mm-hmm.
And share with them, oh, here's an article I think is really great, or this article is interesting, but I disagree with this point. Those kind of things can really add depth to your communication, so they're very important. But the curation is what's essential, because it used to be like it's much harder to find good quality content because there was a lot of people working very hard to really come up with very refined research and that sort of thing. And now, you know, anybody can create content. So it's sort of a level playing field, but the quality is not consistent.
Right.
So when you're curating, you need to be very careful. And I advise people, make sure you read stuff before you share it, because you never know what might be in there.
Yes, that is very, very true.
You put your stamp of approval on it when you share it.
And go to the website before you retweet something. I've come to some that are, you know, phishing sites, and but people are sharing them like mad just because they like the picture or something. Mm-hmm. So, well, thank you so much. We've been talking with Jo Ellen Sargent. And Joey, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing some highlights of your book, Beyond the Launch.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And I strongly recommend that book for just putting a little bit more thought into the business even after you've done that initial surge. And this kind of helps you pick up a few of the pieces that you may not have had time to polish previously. So thank you so much for joining us on the Social Network Show today. And please follow us on Twitter at Social Net Show. And do check into our website. And if you click on blog, it's a great way to review the last few shows and ideas. And that is thesocialnetworkshow.com. And until we meet you again here, please be safe online and off, as well as have a lot of fun.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on The Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.